ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 398 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. This week it's another doubleheader episode as I talk with the creators of Cat and Mouse number 2 and Snow White Zombie Apocalypse. First up is Roland Mann, Barb Kahlberg, and Alex Gallimore, who's working on Cat and Mouse number 2, and they have a Kickstarter beginning this Tuesday, September the 10th. I really enjoyed Cat and Mouse number 1, and to talk with these folks is always a pleasure. Alex Gallimore is taking on the artist duties and is expected to do so through the rest of the miniseries. We talk about what kinds of things we can expect from the book, as well as what's going on with these creators, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they have to say. Then I talk with Brenton Langle from Snow White Zombie Apocalypse, which is coming from Scout Comics and is expected in stores on Wednesday, October 30th, just in time for Halloween. We talk about this fascinating one-shot and how it came to be, and how your support can definitely make more issues happen. It's described as a story of deep woods and old magic mixed with a heavy dollop of blood, sex, kung fu, and gender politics. So there's lots of good things in this book that you'll enjoy. We also talk about the recent Dragon Con convention, which is where I met him, and what other irons he has in the fire right now. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome back to the podcast, Roland Mann. Gosh, it's hard to list all the things you do. Cat and Mouse is the thing we're talking about today, but you had Demon had his own book, and goodness, all kinds of good things, Roland. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic, and yourself?
Good, good. It was good to see you recently, because we are both in Florida. We kind of see each other on occasion as we go from local convention to local convention. Saw you at Infinity last. Well, while we're talking with you right now, what's the next one you're going to be at?
So the next one I'm going to be at is September 21. I'm going to be doing a show called Fandom Kissimmee.
Okay.
It's just one day show there in Kissimmee, Florida.
All right. Okay, that'll be good. Now, Barbara Kahlberg, you were with us last time we talked about Cat and Mouse. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Hanging out here trying to finish up the last page I've got for inking.
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm.
You
see the end line, the finishing line is right in front of you.
It is. It's very much in front of me.
Very good. You did a great job on number one, I have to say. I really enjoyed that. I thought your inking was great.
Absolutely.
I've been practicing a bit. For about 30 years.
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention anything like that. And then we have somebody new joining our group, and that's Alex Gallimore, who is providing, do you want to say pencils? How do we do that, Alex?
Pencils. Pencils for, I'd say, like a better half of half issue 2.
All right. Okay. So well, that'd be interesting. Now, are you fresh to the art scene? Is that what's going on, Alex?
I just graduated from the Cure School, so this will be the first official publish.
Wow, looking forward to that. That'll be fun to see.
He is so fresh, the umbilical cord is still stuck on him.
Okay, so, well, let's start off, Roland. Let's talk about the Kickstarter, which is going to start on the 10th, as I understand it.
Yes.
This is issue 2. When I talked with you last time, we talked about the fact that you were likely going to do this for each issue. And there's five issues in this series?
No, just 4.
4, okay.
Yeah.
So that'll be coming up, and that'll be on Kickstarter. It'll be Cat and Mouse issue 2.
Correct.
Now, if somebody wants to get issue 1, so they may not have gotten it. How do they do that?
So we're going to make issue one available through the Kickstarter with the second issue. Now, obviously, if you don't want to get it through the Kickstarter, it's available on Indie Planet. But we wanted to make the Kickstarter easy. So if somebody says, hey, I want to support you on the Kickstarter, there is going to be a way that you can add on the first issue through any of the reward levels. If you just want to, hey, this is the reward I want to get, but I also want to get number one, it's going to be easy peasy for you to do.
Okay. And one other question before we start talking with the other folks as well. What is Cat and Mouse about?
So Cat and Mouse is a story of a guy who gets a telephone call from his ex-fiance. And she says, hey, my kid sister ran away. Would you go get her and bring her home? Well, it's his ex-fiance, so he doesn't really want to do it, but he's studying to be a cop, so he says, okay, let me see what I can do. So he goes to New Orleans to find her, only to discover she's been caught up in a human trafficking ring. So he has to figure out how to get her out of that human trafficking ring in order to get her home. And yes, there are ninjas involved.
I noticed, I was looking at one of the pictures that's on Facebook, issue number two, and it's got two girl ninjas.
Yes.
So I'm kind of interested, is there anything you tell us about them, or do we need to wait for the book?
Well, let's see. I'm not sure which two you're looking at. That's so two, because two there are multiple ninjas in the book.
Okay.
But we have a teacher, who her name is Kanoich, that people might remember from, readers might remember from the first series, the first volume, I should say. And if you didn't, if you aren't familiar with the first volume, that's okay. You don't need to be. But she's kind of our major BA as far as the girl ninjas go. But yeah, there's another woman in town who's got her a little woman clan of ninjas going.
Mm-hmm. Which is really cool, really cool. Now, Alex, let's talk with you a little bit because you're coming into an established property and stuff. What preparations did you have to do to be able to take the reins of doing artwork for it?
yeah, I want to hear this.
I was from Roland. I was sent issue two and issue one, and he sent me a plethora of Cat and Mouse from the first volume back in the 90s, and so I just looked at that and read issue one a couple times and read the script for issue two and kind of looked at what the character designs were that were given to me and went from there.
All right. So as I was looking at your website, which is Alex Gallimore with two L's art.com, and then I was reading about how you went from being the top of the food chain to the bottom of the food chain when you went to college. I got a huge kick out of that because everybody, when you're in high school, you think you're a senior, you're ahead of everything, and suddenly you go to college and now you're a freshman again, you're on the bottom of the barrel. What was that transition like for you? I mean, was that tough?
Well, it was interesting just because you go from a spot where, you know, like you said, top of the food chain, and then you're thrown into this whole new area where everyone was the top of the food chain. So it's kind of like a new, you know, kind of, I don't know, experience where you can feel yourself out and see exactly where you are in actual, you know, where you want to go and your goals. And so it was nice. It was also your meeting like-minded people that all have similar goals. So it was really fun, and I had my experience.
That's really cool because you've been through the Kubert schools, I remember, and you said before. And how did you get in there? Did you apply? I'm just kind of curious because I never talked to anybody who was a graduate of that before. At least I didn't know it.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously their ads are in comic books everywhere, and, you know, all the major publishers and everything, and I was going to, it was like 4 years ago, I went to New York Comic Con, and it was like a senior trip, sort of, and they had a panel, and figured out they were school, and this one artist trashed another school that I was talking to, but I won't name because they're a pretty big school, and and so I didn't want to go there anymore, so it was that was the path, new goal, and it seemed like the right one to go to, and turned out to be the right choice.
Okay, well, good. Well, you know, sometimes we end up where we're supposed to be, which is a good thing. So, as far as artwork and stuff like that goes, it was sequential art, which is what they refer to as called comics. Was that what you wanted to do when you got out?
Oh yeah, it's been my goal since the past 5-6 years to where I figured out that, you know, I've always been drawing, so it was always something I've been doing, but like I was into comics, fell out of comics, I came back to comics and I realized, you know, this is an actual job field, and so I decided, you know, to work my way into that, and so it was just developing, and I didn't even start my first sequential, like, pages are so bad, but I didn't start those till like my senior year of high school, so it was just figuring things out, and, you know, going to the Cuber School and getting a lot of, you know, 10 classes a week, you know, so you get a lot of experience real quickly.
Did they keep you working and give you a lot of assignments to do when you weren't in the classroom?
Well, yeah, I mean, so there's 10 classes a week. So, you know, every now and then you'll have 10 assignments that you're kind of shuffling through and jumping hoops through. And, you know, one class will have you do a 3-page, you know, sequential, and one might have you ink this or color this. So it's, you know, they make you a Swiss Army knife, basically.
Okay, well, the more you can do, the better off you'll be, I think, in the industry. I see actors who suddenly become directors on the TV shows, and I'm always going, you know, that's a good thing because you can't act the same roles forever. Okay. You know, you got to do that. So it's good for you to have as many tools in your toolbox as you can about that. So one last question, then we'll talk to Barb here. How did you get the role of working on Cat and Mouse? How did that happen?
He doesn't know.
Yeah, oh, he doesn't. Well, maybe Roland, we should ask you that.
No, go ahead. I want to hear his answer, though.
Well, I was contacted through Facebook and saying that he saw my art through the Cuber School profile and sent him over my portfolio and started talking. So
and the rest is history.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly it. I kind of troll, but I shouldn't say troll. That's not the right word. I kind of follow the Cuber School. I think so here's my take on the Cuber School. So even back when I was an editor at Marvel, one of the things that we always did is like, okay, if someone's come from the Cuber School, we know a couple of things about them. Or if they've graduated, particularly if they've graduated, right? Number one, they know how to tell a story. They've had that hammered into their heads about telling a story. Now, the thing about the Cuber School is they don't teach you style, so not everyone comes out, you know, finishes, and suddenly they all draw like Joe Kubert. But what happens is they have their style, but they know how to tell a story. And so, you know, not every style fits every project, not every style fits every story. And so I frequent the Cuber School pages on Facebook. And, you know, as it happened, you know, when the stuff with Theme came up, I'd already been going there, and I'm like, hey, I remember seeing this guy's stuff. And so I went back, and Alex had been posting some stuff, and I'm like, you know what? I really like this guy's work. And that's when I reached out to Alex. This is actually the first time I've heard Alex's voice.
Hmm.
and he's probably saying, man, Roland sounds a whole lot more country than I thought he would.
Well, see, that's the interesting thing about these days. I mean, like the book that I work on, I'm the editor for, is Stabby Bunny. The writer lives in Florida. The artist lives on top of a mountain in North Carolina. And the color artist lives in the Philippines. And they the three of them have never been in the same room together.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
That happens a lot, actually.
Yep, that sure does.
Yeah.
Back in the day when you had to live in New York, that was one thing. And then in the 90s, it was all phone, fax, and FedEx. And now you can live anywhere in the world.
Yep, if you got the internet.
Yeah. Yep. That's the trick. Now, one more question, Roland. Like, obviously, Alex is the artist. Now, is he drawing the whole issue? Is he doing part of it? How's this working?
So Alex is drawing the majority of the book, but Dean's still drawing the first, I don't know, I can't do math, third maybe? And life just kind of got in the way.
Yeah.
You know, there's no big falling out. We don't hate him. He doesn't hate us. And, you know, it's just life just happened with Dean. And Alex is finishing up the second issue. And then he's going to complete the series. So he'll be drawing 3 and 4 as well.
Cool. Very cool. I'm glad to see it. Because what I see on the website, I really like. And, you know, of course, Roland is a like a statesman for those of us in the comics industry down in Florida. So if he chose you, that's a good sign. That'll be good there. So Alex, so we're looking forward to that. Okay, so now Barbara, Chris, that leads me into talking with you. You get a new artist. You're doing Dean's stuff now for a while, and you kind of get used to his style. What's it like to start inking somebody else, you know, mid-project?
Well, you know, it's not all that unusual. When I was working more consistently back in the 90s, I was working on 2 books a month for about 12 years. I did that. And there wasn't a whole lot of instances where I would stick with one penciler for a very long time, because there's always people jumping in to help fill out issues that were getting behind or something like that. It was very rare for me to stick with one single penciler for an extended run. When I spent 2.5 years on Impulse, and I think that was the longest run I ever had on a single penciler. I spent most of it with Craig Rousseau, and then I wrapped up with Ethan Van Sciver. But no, I'm used to jumping around from different styles of different pencilers. It comes second nature to me.
Would you prefer to stay with somebody longer, or now you've done it for a while now and you're used to that process?
Oh, it's like I said, it's second nature. It's fun to stay with one person, just because you get to learn it so intimately. But then it's also a challenge and kind of fun to mix it up a bit. So it really isn't a problem to jump around.
Okay, well that's good, because you know, not there's some people who seem to follow artists along. I mean, Danny Meekie is the name, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that. He was doing Greg Capullo stuff for the longest time. If I ever saw Greg Capullo, the inker was Danny Meekie. And so I you know, it's interesting to me, but, you know, I think you're more versatile and probably more useful the more you're able to handle different, you know, artists and art styles and good things like that. Go ahead.
There's a vast, vast range of different styles that I've done. I've done everything from children's book, which is basically like a coloring book and huge fat lines, to right down to incredibly detailed work like Ethan used to do.
Interesting. But you don't mind any of those styles?
No, it's kind of fun to mix it up. An editor will say, I really need that old-fashioned brush look. And then another editor will say, give me the image look. And you just got to be versatile.
Mm-hmm. Which is cool. I mean, Cat and Mouse, it's great that you're going to continue on with the book. Are there other things that you're working on that we ought to be aware of?
Yeah, so I'll
finish. Well, you lobbed that softball up for.
I'm actually the creator of a new series that will be going through Silverline called Divinity, and I'm branching out. I've never done my own book before, but it will also be going through Silverline. Wonderful, wonderful penciler from Mexico. His name is Alex as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've got two Alexes, one on each book. Alex Sarabia will be penciling Divinity, and I'll be inking it and creating it. R.A. Jones is scripting it for me, because even though I'm a creator, I'm not a very good scripter, so I need a little help in that department.
So she's not actually giving herself enough credit as well. So Barb actually was very instrumental in the story. So even though RA may have typed the script out, Barb is very, it's her story. She's very instrumental in it.
Yeah, it's my plot, my characters, my ideas, and everything like that. I just need help putting it
final form.
On paper.
Yeah. Okay. Can you give us any idea what it's about?
Sure. An 11-year-old girl suddenly comes into mysterious powers, and her parents are mysteriously killed. Her brother comes home from Afghanistan. They don't really know each other all that well. They're fairly far apart in age. And suddenly he's saddled with this 11-year-old girl that he really knows very little about, and discovers that she's got the power to heal. And obviously that raises a whole can of worms as far as keeping it secret or people who will want to exploit that. There's an evil cabal involved and people wanting to get their hands on her for all different kinds of reasons. And then they'll end up being on a long road trip after all said and done. I guess on the run.
Is it called Divinity for a reason?
That's her name, Divinity.
Okay. Oh, okay. I thought it might have a double entendre.
Yeah, it's a double entendre. Her name is Divinity. We call her Vinny, and her brother Zach and Vinny, and Zach's other Marine friend Olivia. But yes, the name is a double entendre.
Okay,
her name and a question.
Yeah, when I saw it, I thought there's some divine intervention or something going on with this, you know, based on the name. But you never know. Sometimes people, you know, throw red herrings right out there.
Well, so, it is cool.
Okay, so we have to read the book to get the good stuff. Do you know when this is going to start happening?
It'll be sometime in 2020. We're already into the penciling and inking the pages. We're teasing along a colorist. I can't reveal it yet, just because we don't know he hasn't 100% committed. But if he does, it's going to be awesome.
Cool. Yes.
So it's going to come through Silverline. Is that going to kickstart as well, or how are you going to do that?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, that makes sense because it's a good thing. Now, I asked this about before, but it still comes to mind. Let's say you don't get in the Kickstarter and you said it goes through your website. I mean, for Divinity, will that be the same thing through SilverlineComics.com?
Absolutely. Yep. Okay. Yep. You'll be able to find everything through the SilverlineComics.com website.
Okay. Now, do you go to cons, Barb, as well? Because, you know, as I said, I see Roland, you know, a couple of times a month as we go through these different cons and stuff. Do you go to conventions? I don't think you're in Florida.
I'm not. I'm in Wisconsin.
Okay.
It's like really far away. We're scattered all over. Kevin is located in California. I'm in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And we got Roland down there in Florida. I don't even know where Alex is from.
Alex is in Texas.
Yeah, oh, so. My God. He's a Texas boy. yes, I do cons. I'm going to be doing the DuPage Comic-Con here in Wisconsin in October. I think it's October 12th. And then I'll be doing Wizard World Madison. I think that's October
25th. Wow.
So, yeah. Wow.
Good stuff. Well, while we're on the subject, Alex, do you go to cons? Have you started up your con circuit yet?
I did a couple while I was at school, but going to be going to Daytona Beach Comic Con in October with Roland and a bunch of other Silver Line guys.
Oh, well. Cool. Oh, man, you're going to get to go come to Florida.
Yeah.
Because, we just went through the whole business with Dory, and let's hope that doesn't happen when you're coming our way. We don't want to go through that. That's past us now, thank heavens, so we don't have to worry about that. But everybody has – wherever you live, there's something – that gives you agony when it comes to stuff. I used to live in the Northeast and it was snow. And so now I'm down in Florida and now it's hurricanes. And every time of the year there's something going on. So Alex, let's talk about, I guess Cat and Mouse is going to keep you busy for a while.
So I'm working on starting issue 3 and I'll probably be penciling by the time the Kickstarter is launched. But it'll be couple months of work, which
is
pretty nice.
Very good. Well, of course, as artists, I was reading in your profile, it says the crazy journey of art and long sleepless nights that artists have to experience, it seems like, has already started for you. So you've got good things to come.
Oh, he's young. He can take it.
I gotta say, Alex, you're the young buck of this whole thing.
Yeah. I turned 22 in February, so.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even get into comics until I was 29, and I put in 16-hour days doing inking for 2 books a month and covers and trading cards all at the same time. Yeah.
Wow. I got to ask Alex, do you do things digitally? Do you still do things like with pencil and paper? How do you do stuff?
It's a bit of both. For issue 2, it's mostly digital, but I'm going to try and knock on wood, everything for every page will be done traditional. But for issue 2, it's mostly digital. But it's a mix of both.
Well, I'll tell you a good reason why it's good to do paper and pencil or something. You can afterwards sell your pages.
Yeah.
The person we work with on Stabity Bunny, he does everything digitally, and so there is no, you know, added income from that. Whenever I talk to artists, I always ask them that, because you've got this extra income sitting there just waiting to help, you know, you've done the work, you sell the pages, it just adds that little bit of extra money to your income that can really make a difference.
So, yeah, but, sword, for sure.
Yeah, because it's a suggestion, you know, I always want to try to help people out and make, you know, survive, especially if they're really good. That we want to see you in the industry for a long time, so every help we can do to help keep you going is worth it.
So I'm excited to say that there's going to be a couple of his original pencil pages available as a reward level on the Kickstarter. And I'm sure he's going to be bringing a bunch of his original stuff to Daytona.
Very good. So what about you, Barb? I mean, when you're inking, you really can't take original pages, can you?
Oh, yes, that I love this new way of doing things. Back in the day, the penciler got to keep 2/3 of the pages and the inker got 1/3. Hmm. So DC and Marvel used to send me back 1/3 of the pages that I inked. Hmm. Now, nowadays, pencils are scanned into the computer and either dropped in Dropbox or emailed, whatever. I get them on my end, pull them up on the computer, I blue line them in Photoshop or GIMP, whatever, mm-hmm. print them out on 500-pound Strathmore mm-hmm. or cans and paper, ink them, scan them back into the computer, send them to the colorist. But I get to keep all of those inked pages.
Mm.
So now I keep 100% of what I ink. As you said before, I take those in portfolios to conventions and I sell them.
Okay, because you know every little bit helps.
It
really does, especially in the artist and the comics industry. You get to do those things. Now, unfortunately, Roland can't go and sell scripts, probably.
No, well, you know what? It's weird. I used to try, and I did have, you know, a couple of for the first series of Cat and Mouse, I did have a couple of hardcore fans buy some from me, but I found that in general, no one else really wanted scripts, and I really didn't, you know, I couldn't really sell any others. So yeah, I just kind of gave up trying that. Instead, what I like to do with the scripts now is, you know, a lot of people like to see them, but they don't really want to spend any money. So especially through like a Kickstarter, it's a great thing to be able to add to the extras. Mm. So, you know, so when fans, you know, support the Kickstarter, they get the extras. They get to see pencil sketches. They get to see, you know, actually, this last time I went real old school with my script. You know, we work, I like to work Marvel style when an artist will do that. And so I've got my typed plot that I have, but I actually went and the script is all handwritten on notebook paper, which is the way I used to always do all of my scripts. I just sit down in a chair and have the artwork in front of me and then just write. And so I've done that. So I'll scan those for the extras so people can see that. You know, I mean, it's really just a handwritten, you know, dialogue. You can see me cross out things and move little arrows pointing here and there. But, yeah, no one really wants to buy scripts.
No, sadly. Hopefully they'll buy the books. That's the
it is. That's my hope.
I've bought scripts.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you bought them because you wanted to practice drawing, right?
Yeah.
See, it's a good thing to do that because, you know, honestly, they always say, and you've done this, and you said from the moment you've been able to hold a pencil, you've been drawing, Alex. So, you know, that's good practice, is to keep it up. Don't stop. People think suddenly they've arrived and they just stop.
Penciling right now, so.
What was that?
I'm penciling right now, so.
Okay.
Yeah, see, this is the advantage that artists have, too. They can talk on the phone and keep drawing, right? Or they can watch TV and draw. But now I cannot do that as a writer. I can't watch a TV show and write. I can't talk on the phone and write if I'm focused on a story.
Because mm-hmm. the cons is the same thing, too. You know, if you're a writer, it's hard to write when people are coming up and talking with you and stuff and breaking your sense of thought, your train of thought. But when artists can sit there and draw, of course, you get interrupted. You just go back to where you were and start doing it. So, you know, I always see that. Which, Alex, you're bringing – Roland said you're going to bring stuff to Daytona, like artwork or pinups or what?
Yes, I'm going to try to bring all my, you know, good original art, and also have some pinups and prints and sketch covers and whatnot, and probably some pre-made commissions and stuff like that. So probably a lot.
Do you do commissions?
I do. That's what I'm working on sort of right now for the Kickstarter.
What about you, Barb? Do you do commissions if you go to a con?
I actually don't ink at conventions, and I'm one of the rare animals that do not, because I get very, very anxious when people are watching me, so my hands shake, which isn't very good for an inker, you know? So, yeah, it's a nervous thing, so I do all my inking at home.
Okay. Do you have an inking room where it's just your place?
Yeah, I have a studio.
Okay, that's good. So, see, that's the thing, you know, because some people want hubbub. They play certain kinds of music. They do things in the background that kind of helps them with that. But I'm like Roland. I have to have silence if I'm going to write stuff. I can't play music.
Inking is actually not enough to keep my brain busy, so I listen to audiobooks and ink at the same time.
Oh, interesting. Any particular kind?
Usually either autobiographies, biographies, and fantasy books. Right now, I'm listening to The Cycle of Iran right now.
Oh wow! See, I would be—I'd miss something, and when I cut lose concentration on it, and then I'd have to go back and listen to it again. So that's good for you. I gotta applaud that. If you can do that, it's terrific.
Well, my brain runs on so many tracks at once. I gotta keep it busy.
Well, that's good. Well, you guys make a good team, I have to say. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this is going to go with Cat and Mouse.
Thank you.
So the issue one I really liked, and I'm looking forward to issue two, and that's going to be, okay, let's say Kickstarter successful, start in the 10th, and then it's successful. When do you expect we'll have the book ready for people?
Should be ready by November. So we will make sure that we have copies for us at Daytona. They may be sort of Daytona special copies, but there's no reason we can't get most of the books out by November. Okay. So they would make great Christmas presents if somebody wants to get them and hang on to them for a month for Christmas.
Right.
It's a timely message too. I think it's a really timely message. Human trafficking is huge up here in Wisconsin. Milwaukee is like a major hub for it. So I think it's an important message to get out.
Mm-hmm. I feel that way, yeah. And of course, Orlando, is one of the top human trafficking cities in the U.S. And, how often do you ever hear it? I mean, I've been here almost 8 years, and I almost never hear anything about it. And, as a parent, and mine aren't little anymore, but as a parent, that distresses me. It distresses me that no one really talks about this. It's like we've accepted the modern form of slavery and we just don't care. Instead, we're worried about, I'm not saying these other things aren't valid worries, but it's like we only ever talk about, guns and climate and this and that. And I'm like, wait a minute, what about all the human trafficking? And it bothers me. And I'm very quick to say, now this is a comic book, okay? This is not a real story that's happening in Cat and Mouse. But as Barb said, the topic is certainly, I think certainly a legit one.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, we've got task force up here that's dedicated to it.
Wow. Well, it's an odd thing with people. I think in Orlando, one of the reasons they don't focus on it is because that wouldn't attract tourists.
Yeah.
They're worried about the tourists. Tourist trade is primo down here, and so they don't want people worrying about that. So that's probably why they're quiet about it, but that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. So it's really something. Well, you guys are doing good stuff. And Alex, I can't wait to see your artwork on it. I've already seen Barb and Roland on there. So now we got to get you in there and see how this all goes. I'm sure it's going to come together real well.
You're going to like what you see.
Yeah, I always like what I see. You always do wonderful stuff.
Oh,
Roland,
thank you,
Barb,
sir.
Too, as well. And I'm looking forward to Alex. Alex is going to be the new guy on the block, and that's going to be fun to see. It's always fun to see somebody rise to that challenge and to get a sequential art going and make it happen real nicely. So
he's going to rock and roll.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. Well, you guys keep it up. And again, it's going to start on September 10th. Do you know how much you're going to be asking for, Roland, or is that going to be better when we get to that?
We have a pretty good idea. I have a pretty good idea, but I'm not 100% certain. So let me wait on that one.
Okay. Well, go to Kickstarter, look for Cat and Mouse number two. And you will get a good book if you be sure to subscribe to enjoy and support this good thing, because it's a good thing. So, well, you guys enjoy it, and I'll let you guys get back to work. And Alex is still working, so we don't have to worry about him. He's earning his pay, and maybe, I don't know, Barb, you don't do it when you're doing this, because even though we're not looking at you, he's probably
going to do that. I'm not inking at the moment, but as soon as we hang up, I will be.
Okay, and on that note, what we're going to do is we're going to let people get back to business, and we're really looking forward to it. Again, Cat and Mouse, issue number two, going to be on Kickstarter, starting on September 10th, and go there for more information. So thanks, you guys. I'm really looking forward to this whole book.
Thanks, Wayne. Really appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Wayne.
Thank you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
It's great to welcome to the podcast Brenton Langle, the creator of Snow White Zombie Apocalypse, among other good things. My understanding is, Brenton, is that you're a musician, and you wrote this as a play originally, among other good things. How you doing?
I'm great, though I am not a musician, not a professional one. I do work with musicians, though, so that makes sense. One of my biggest projects is with the dark wave goth band The Crew Shadows, and I've been with them at Dragon Con, so that's where the musician thing came from.
Okay, yeah, because that's where I met you, is at this year's Dragon Con, which blew me out of the water. I love that convention. I went to it thinking I've seen everything I can possibly see, and then when I got to Dragon Con, I was like, wow, where has this place been all my life? It's just an amazing place. Have you been going there all the time?
I've been attending for 5-6 years maybe now. Since it's 2019, so I've been 5 years, because I got there for the first time in 2014. I'd heard about it for years and heard that it was really good, but it wasn't until I started collaborating with the Crew Shadows, and they're basically royalty at Dragon Con. They've had a booth there for like 22 years, and the lead singer invited me to come down, and we were reading the fantasy novel that the two of us were collaborating on as an official event, for 5 years in a row now.
Wow. So I saw you. You were in costume. You came over to the Comic and Pop Artist Alley is the way that I think they defined it.
I had to wait forever through the line to just get there.
The thing that's amazing to me, we'll get off of this in just a second here, but every floor on that, on those four or five buildings that they take over, could be its own convention somewhere else. Just amazing. I mean, where we were was, it took me the whole con to get around and see everybody I wanted to see just in that area. So it's just amazing. But it was good to meet you there, and I didn't get to see you guys perform, but hopefully I want to go next year and get to do that. That's my idea.
Absolutely. Well, if Rogue is back next year and I'm there, I'll definitely have you there, and maybe we can get you backstage. I was cosplaying Ryu, what was really interesting about that was not only was that a cosplay, it was actually one of the lazier cosplays I've done, but the black belt is actually my black belt, which I had earned a month before.
Oh, cool. Very cool. Yeah, it's pretty good, because you were in a totally different building
That was part of my problem. But anyway, it looks good.
Yeah, it was based out of the Marriott Marquis.
Yeah. See, that was a couple buildings down. We were in this place. There was building 2, fourth floor, with three levels of vendors underneath us. So I was... Mm-hmm. I was blown. So anyway, the Snow White Zombie Apocalypse. This is based on a play that you did, if I understand this correctly.
Correct. I started out as a playwright. I graduated from the University of Kentucky with a degree in theater in 2006. And I immediately said to myself, oh, Lord, what did I do? But after kind of bouncing around the Midwest, particularly in the Cincinnati, Ohio, Kentucky area, I went and... without getting too much into the weeds, after hiking the Appalachian Trail, Maine to Georgia, I moved to New York City, and that is where I had my first play staged, which was Snow White Zombie Apocalypse. I'd written several plays before that, but this was actually written as the original Snow White Zombie, as a short for the New York Theater Experiment's Fairy Tale Smackdown 24-hour play competition. So... The story in the comic book you read was actually written over a single night.
Wow.
Like lightning just struck. Since then, the story and the play and the world and characters have been growing through multiple incarnations till eventually, you know, Scout, the chance came to put them out into comic book form through Scout.
Because as I was looking through, I was doing some research on this before we started to talk about, it looks like this was originally going to appear in 2017, and now it's, I guess something caused a delay, and now we're doing it in 2019.
Yes, indeed. I won't get too much into it with it. It's just, let's just say quality takes time. and Brendan, I brought the original 7 pages and the cover to New York Comic Con, and I pitched all the big companies and all the medium companies and everything, and it was very difficult to get anybody to pay any attention at all. And then I looked over, and there was several artists sitting at their booth drawing. And I looked over, I liked what they were drawing, so I walked up, I said, are you guys a comic company? And they said, we're Scout. And I said, do you want to possibly look at my comic? And they looked at it for about 30 seconds. And luckily my artist, Hyando Park, is very, very good. And so they were just like, oh man, you've got to meet our boss. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, they took us, over, and Brendan took like one look at the cover, which is the cover that you're seeing now on the issue, and the 7, black and white pages. And it was just like, I want it. And, yeah, it was, we kind of moved on from there. You know, I had a lot of other companies that I was looking at, but what I really liked about Brendan was that he was not only tied into the comic world, but also the literary world and, the film and television world. So, me as a dramatic writer, and him as a novelist and dramatic writer, like we just really connected there. And that kind of led to us signing the deal and the book being announced for 2017.
Okay. Well, you know what? I remember I was talking with Brendan because I've interviewed him on this podcast in the past and stuff when he was doing Flash Gordon. And when I saw him at New York Comic Con, I remember him mentioning Snow White Zombie Apocalypse. And he was really into it. The moment he took a look at it, he really loved it and he wanted to print it. And I was like, Snow White Zombie Apocalypse. Okay, that's a new take on that. So it's something different. So, yeah, he was real interested in it. Even back then, he was talking to me about a couple of years ago. That's why I was surprised when I saw it was there in 2017. It was even listed amongst the stuff they were planning to print. But you know what? It's better to wait until it's ready than it is to shove it out there and get something that's not going to fly. So I think you did a wise thing by doing it. And, you know, comics take time, and I know people don't understand that. It looks like it just popped out. And no, you were lucky to be able to write it in one night. I mean, that's writers will tell you that's a wonderful thing when that happens, but it doesn't always take place. So
no, definitely doesn't. I mean, to be fair, you know, it has gone through some evolution. The original play was written in a single night, and we produced it as part of the Estrogenius Festival, which was a celebration of female voices. And for those listening to me, would be very surprised, but, you know, I got long hair, so maybe someone saw me from behind and assumed I was a chick. But no, the Estrogenius Festival they felt that the script that I had written really kind of captured certain aspects of the female voice and the female experience. And so they, and it had some great roles for women. And so they had it produced as part of their play, festival. It won Audience's Choice, that original production. We got a week, extension. And then, I wrote a longer version for the, New York Fringe Festival, which is called Snow White Zombie Apocalypse. So the comic book essentially that you've got there, the story actually continues. That's about 10 minutes into a 2 hour, story. We got great reviews, sold out every night. And, I actually did get offered a run on, like off Broadway. But I didn't have the capital at the time, and thank God I didn't, because had I had the capital and sunk that money into an off Broadway run, it would have opened the same weekend Hurricane Sandy hit New York City.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have opened.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't have opened, and I would have been out a lot of money.
Man.
So, you know, isn't the same thing like with the book taking a while to come out? Things happen for a reason. What I'm hoping is that, you know, now that it's out or will be out on August 30th, you know, people will like it, and we can sort of explode from here and hopefully, you know, continue the series or find some other mediums to work within. You know, it's a story that's very close to my heart, and it's super fun to write.
Mm-hmm. Now, I got to correct you on one thing. I don't think it's August. I think it's October 30th that this is coming.
Oh, did I say
August? Yeah, you said August.
I'm dyslexic. Yeah, I'm dyslexic, and for some reason, my brain thinks October is August.
I wish it were. You know?
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about this is it couldn't be timed better, is the thing I was thinking about. When this comes out, like, on October 30th, I mean, that's going to be right around Halloween. I mean, it's a perfect time for this book to come out. Just ideal.
I think it's really great, yeah. And let's hope the comic shops that are stocking it think the same thing.
You know, they've got this, and I was kind of wishing this was a part of it. They have this Halloween Comic Fest that goes on, like, the Saturday before Halloween. And I was thinking this would have been ideal to be a part of that. You know, maybe next year we can do that, put that in. Is this, the question I have, though, is this a one-shot? Is this going to be... It looks like it's the beginning of a story. You said it's the first 10 minutes of a play. Are there going to be other issues coming along, or is this going to be the only one for now?
I mean, it's officially a one-shot. I'll tell you, if we can work past some of the issues that made it go from 2017 to 2019 to get released, or if people, you know, love it so much and make that clear to Scout and to everybody that they want to see more of this story, I would absolutely be 1,000% behind continuing it. You know, the biggest issue, I guess, is to overcome the hurdles, the artistic hurdles that it takes to get the book out at the level of quality that it's out at. So, you know, it's definitely something I'd love to see happen in the future. And, you know, if people really love this book and want to see more, they should let us know, because that could lead directly to us continuing it.
Well, one thing they can do is buy it. Be sure to get out there and buy the book. Order it through your local store. If you're at all intrigued by it, and I found it very entertaining, very fun to read. It's this really interesting combination of two kinds of so you've got fairy tales, and then you've got Walking Dead involved. That these the two kind of comes together, and it's really kind of interesting because what it does is it throws everything up in the air, so we don't know what's really going on. And I like that in the story. When I know what's happening, I'm bored. I don't want to know. I want to be able to go through and figure out, and you take things in various directions that I didn't ever dream they would ever go. So I was really I was very intrigued by it all. And honestly, I enjoyed the whole book, and even the ending had me going, I wish there was more to this. It ends, and I don't want to spoil what the ending is because I think you need to read the book to get it, but it ends really well, I thought. So very good. You know, the use of fairy tale lore and characters and stuff in this really odd situation is, you know, it's really something to see. It's really a very smartly put together book, I think.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you love it. You know, it was a very interesting story just for me, because I wrote it I was brand new in New York, you know. I had never had anything produced. I'd only, you know, kind of been a bit of a small-time actor. Mm-hmm. And I had moved up there with my girlfriend of like a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And we had just, like, taken out a lease on this apartment in Harlem that, you know, was more expensive than anything I'd ever touched for far less than most of the I'm sorry, for far more than what I paid for, like, you know, it was more expensive, but we got quite a lot less. That was what I was trying to say. Mm. You know, I think there's a little bit to be said for the shock that Snow White feels upon awakening to Prince Charming's kiss. Mm-hmm. 28 days after the zombie apocalypse, right, to find that, like, all of the rules that she's learned about the world, everything she understands about how society works, guess what? That's not how society works. Mm-hmm. And here's this giant mass of creatures that want to devour you and make you one of them.
Right. And they used to be friends of hers. That was the thing. That was a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really
good stuff. Absolutely.
I really liked the way that it was it's described. Now let me read a little bit of the description, because I really like it. It says, with the seven dwarves dead, the quintessential fairy tale princess must join forces with her polyamorous Prince Charming. I thought that was interesting. And his toughest nails paramour, Rapunzel, to wage a losing battle against death itself. I thought that was an interesting way to phrase it, a losing battle. I mean, everybody dies eventually. And so mm-hmm. when I read that, I thought, boy, that's really a very different look at Snow White than I've ever seen before. So I liked that. It was an interesting way to phrase it and to put it. And it bears out in the story. The story is really well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because that was one of the things that not to get too far off topic here, but like Game of Thrones ended a few months ago. And one of the things that made me really angry about the ending of Game of Thrones was that they killed the Night King. Mm-hmm. And when I saw that happen, I was like, no, you can't do that. He's the embodiment of death. You can't kill death. You don't beat death by stabbing him in the belly with a magic knife. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in a lot of ways, all struggles with death are a losing battle. And it's also very interesting because other stuff in my work has dealt directly with death. One of the major things that drove me to, you know, move to New York and start working as a writer and all that stuff was actually the untimely death of a very good friend of mine who passed away in his sleep at like 25, days before I turned 25.
Wow.
And that became like a major catalyzing event of my life. I drove me to hike the Appalachian Trail to write the book that I'm currently collaborating on with Rogue, mm-hmm. Which deals very heavily with death, and in a roundabout way led me to when I would write Snow White Zombie Apocalypse.
Hmm. See, it's funny because that era of one's life is usually people feel immortal. They can't be, you know, they can't possibly die. Mm-hmm. Nothing bad can possibly happen to them. And for that to happen to you and for you to go through that kind of experience and see how it affected you, that's a really interesting experience. That's something that I don't hear very often.
Yeah, it was very, you know, I mean, it's been 10 years, so I'm largely over it as much as one can get over something like that. I kind of worked through it in a lot of ways, but I remembered I was working as an actor, like in this one company, doing a sketch comedy and rock and roll. Mm-hmm. And when I heard about my friend, and, you know, he had stayed behind in our crappy town and become a teacher and had started the next generation of freaks. He had a writer's group with the younger people in town called the Shadow Scribes. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that he had passed away, I just remember being absolutely devastated and just thinking to myself, like, oh my God, I'm here ignoring all my friends and family, working 60, 80 hours a week so I get to be a professional actor. Like, what does that even mean? And what, in 20 years I get my boss's job? I don't want my boss's job now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I kind of processed that, and what that led to me doing was asking for that happens to you. You don't just go into a musical. Mm-hmm. So I asked for a sabbatical, and I went and walked the Appalachian Trail, 2,176 miles, now 2,180 miles. And after that, I said, you know, well, I'm not afraid of anything anymore. Time to move to New York.
Wow. It's an interesting experience because what people do is, you know, go the other direction is the thing I'm always, you know, it's something to see that people grow into in different ways. And this, you use this experience as a positive to be able to be creative and talk about issues and stuff like that, that maybe other people your age may not do. And in a sense, that's given you a leg up because you get to do these things and other people can relate to them better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I hope so. I hope that people can relate to the struggle in the book. I mean, it's a very kind of high concept world. The prince, as you mentioned, is polyamorous. He's somewhat cursed to fall in love with every princess he sees, including the dead ones, by the way. Rapunzel is this character who's been living in this world. She's cut her hair short. She's murdered Captain Hook and taken his jacket. Mm-hmm. So the two of them are very much a product because they went through this. And then, of course, Snow White, awakening to the kiss, she is very much like, the quintessential fairy tale princess.
Mm-hmm.
And is very much in that mindset when she's awakened and confronted with this world. And also, you know, I found that really funny.
Mm-hmm.
I remember just writing the script and laughing so much when, like, one of the lines, not to spoil anything, is like when she's like, how did this happen? He's like, or he says, how long have you been asleep? And she's like, since November 16th. And he's like, it's 28 days later. The dead have risen. They're attacking and devouring the living.
Well, another thing I enjoyed was Rapunzel's reaction to all that. She is surprised, shall we say. The stuff that she says, she uses a modern take on things like that, you know. She's used to dead bodies. She's not used to people that are in a trance or, you know, under a spell or something like that. So she looks at it as a very different thing than what he does.
Yeah, you see a body that as if it's dead rising. And, you know, that's been something that's been in the Snow White story for years,
mm-hmm.
like that people usually, like, overlook. Like Walt Disney purposefully overlooked that. But you got to think, like, what kind of guy is walking through the forest and finds, like, a woman with snow white skin in a glass coffin and thinks, I want to kiss that.
Well, she lets him know that's not something that she approves of.
Definitely not, you know, and she's totally right because he is definitely running around on her. And I have a feeling that he's been running around on her since before this. And, you know, she does have a monologue where she kind of goes into her past with him. By the way, interesting thing. So I don't know. There's two pages where Rapunzel talks about her past. And what's mm-hmm. so cool and what I think some people will miss mm-hmm. is that when I wrote that, I wrote it and I was kind of pulling on the Beauty and the Beast, from the Disney movie, like with the stained glass.
Mm-hmm.
So I said that it should be reminiscent of that, but I wanted it to all be her hair.
Mm-hmm.
And Hyando took that, and he actually worked it in because Rapunzel is basically from Spanish Morocco in this, so she's coming out of, like, a more Muslim culture. Mm-hmm. And so there are these gorgeous kind of relief, or not relief, but essentially, like, collage of interlocking designs that are that you see in a lot of Muslim buildings, and that's actually what's in the background there. So it's reminiscent of stained glass, but it's not, and mm-hmm. it fits, like, with her character's cultural background. So mm-hmm. I thought that was a really nice touch, and I'm willing to bet, like, 9 times out of 10, no one's going to pick up on that but me. But that's one of the things that I love in books, when you mm-hmm. can find those little six-person references.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I got to ask, how did you come across the artist?
Hyando? Mm-hmm. Oh, this is actually really good. So I'm a huge fan of Neil Gaiman, mm-hmm. And probably some of Snow White Zombie was inspired by his short story Snow Glass Apples, mm-hmm. which isn't the best story, but I liked kind of the look on that. Mm-hmm. It's not his best story. He's an amazing writer, though. I'm not putting him down. Mm-hmm. So I went to see Neil Gaiman. My wife bought me tickets mm-hmm. At BAM in New York, mm-hmm. and I was there. And we had to wait 3 hours in line to get an autograph from Neil.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're waiting in line, I hear this guy behind me. And I think it was like a bunch of Neil Gaiman fans and a bunch of Amanda Palmer fans. And I hear this guy, and I'm like, is that guy faking a British accent? And I turn around because, you know, it's geeks. You know, we might be faking things. And I meet a guy by the name of Michael Vincent Bramley, who has worked with DC and his wife, Alice Mifuli. And they were behind us for 3 hours. And we started talking. Turned out his British accent was totally real since he'd been living in America. So it had been wasn't quite the same as it was when it came from England, which is probably why I thought it was fake at first. And you know, we got to talking and we really connected, and it turned out he worked in comics. So I said, I work in the theater and I had this play that I thought would be great for a comic. And so he and I started talking about it, and he was the one that introduced me to Kondo. And this book, I really want to make this very clear, like, this book would not exist without Michael Vincent Bramley. And also, he is an absolutely brilliant writer. He has a book called Sherbet, which is about a drug addicted, gender flipped lesbian Sherlock Holmes in a like post-apocalyptic steampunk world. It's really cool. And if you read that, there's also an evil version of me in that book. So yeah, and also his wife, Alice, is a really, really excellent illustrator in and of herself. She does comics. Everybody should look her up.
Oh, cool. Cool. Sherbet, huh? We'll have to look it up.
Well, Sherbet. I think it's Sherbet, not Sherbert.
Oh, it's not like the ice cream. It's
not like the ice cream, no. Okay. But just Sherbet and Sherlock Holmes, or Google Michael Vincent Bramley. Other interesting fact about that guy, he may be responsible for the framing of the PG-13 cut of Deadpool. Really? Like, have you seen the Deadpool movie?
I have avoided Deadpool. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. The second Deadpool movie is actually done as like a Deadpool kidnaps Fred Savage and reads him the story of the Deadpool movie, but censored, like it's The Princess Bride.
Oh.
And yeah, that was actually tweeted at the star Ryan Reynolds months before, like quite a while before they did it, by Michael. That was totally his idea.
So, sounds interesting.
It's another little interesting bit of trivia.
Yeah, it'd be good stuff. So, see, the thing of it is now, of course, I'm left wanting more after reading this. I mean, there are everything that's possible, I think, that you can do along these lines is going in there. I have to ask, there's an appearance a lot of times about apples. And, of course, you know, when Snow White sees apples, she freaks because, you know, that's how she got where she was. But everybody's always – apples are coming out. I mean, there's, we see another character carrying apples in her basket, and everybody's just constantly picking them up and eating them. And I'm always thinking, wait a minute, aren't those cursed? You know, because we're so used to Snow White eating the cursed apple. But I guess they're not. I mean, but she's the only one that freaks out when she sees that.
Yes. Well, they're just normal apples. This is okay. So the character in the beginning that we're introduced to is Little Red Riding Hood, and she does not meet with a very good end, as we should put it. And so, like, Little Red Riding Hood, she's got the basket of apples, which is then found by Prince Charming. He's starving. The apple metaphor, I think, was in my head, oddly enough, probably because of Twilight. Because the Twilight books, which I haven't, you know, I didn't read very far. I read the first couple sentences and was like, oh God, okay. But the cover design of the original Twilight book with the two white hands going down and holding the apple, and what that is evocative of, and, you know, how in Western culture, like, we oftentimes say that Eve was tempted by an apple. So an apple, especially like a red one like that, is a really, really good just image to work with, because it captures, I think, innocence. It captures predation to a certain extent. Like, you know, Prince Charming, when he sees the apples, he's starving. He goes straight for them, doesn't even think about it. It's pretty gross because some of them, as we saw, got splattered with blood.
Yeah.
you know, so there's this whole thing that it's a fruit. It symbolizes new life. It's been used as a constant motif, and it kind of captures this sort of Thanatos and Eros kind of feel, where it is both attraction and repulsion. in a certain sense, like because of the symbolism that the apple has, and also because of how inviting it can look. And I think like those two things together are kind of the essence of a lot of romantic literature. Mm-hmm. And I mean by that, like capital R romance. It's kind of the essence of the Gothic movement. It's the, you know, to tell you that I'm a very goth, and I've got a lot of friends who are goth. I officially hang out with a goth band, and you know, there is the beauty combined with death. Mm-hmm. And those two things together just proved to be very, very captivating. It's like hitting the gas pedal on human emotion.
Interesting. So that's really good. So the book is really fast paced. I really enjoyed the fact that things moved at a rapid clip. When there's exposition, it goes, you know, it's to the point and then moves back into what's going on. And there's a lot of drama going on in the good sense between the characters. So I really like the book a lot, and if this is the first 10 minutes of your play, you obviously have more story you can tell.
Oh yeah, this goes on. There's other characters that come in. In the published version, hopefully we included 4 pages of extra, so you'll see more. There's a character called the Woodsman who is brought in, who's incredible. There is an evil version of Prince Charming, called Prince Dashing, who is completely horrifying and super fun. I somewhat based him on Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So if you read it, in my head, he has a British accent or an Australian accent, I think. There's also Nyx, the Black Fairy, who caused the whole zombie apocalypse.
Really?
Oddly enough, yeah. It didn't make... So in the original play... There's a line in there where Snow White is like, "But how did this happen?" And Prince Charming says, "How else a birthday party?" One fairy got left out, and she got all kinds of butt hurt. Before you knew it, bam, zombie apocalypse.
Oh, wow.
And so when you meet Nyx, she's kind of a reimagining of kind of the Maleficent character, the Black Fairy from the Sleeping Beauty thing. But of course, this is Snow White zombie, so she is... very different, but she is actually the one who caused this to happen. There's, you mentioned there's two things going on here. It's fairy tales and The Walking Dead, but there's actually 4 things that are going on in Snow White Zombie. The 4 things that are going on is zombie movies, zombie and the horror genre. Mm-hmm. There is the fairy tale genre. There is also, I'm a huge Tolkien fan. I'm a really big fantasy fan. So this is very much fantasy genre. And it will take on more fantastical elements as we move like further on into the story. You know, because I just can't help but write that into whenever I get an opportunity like that. Mm-hmm. And then the final thing is 70s Kung Fu. I'm a martial artist, originally like Snow White Zombie began with a fight because in high school I had learned how to do a thing called Jujuende, which was like stage combat, but for martial artists it was stage combat where you were showing off your skills as opposed to necessarily telling a story. Mm-hmm. So like when I got to New York and started like, I actually like blew the pants off a lot of people because they were used to standard stage combat choreography. And at the very beginning of the play, like we had the big bad wolf rush onto the stage and get like to have Rapunzel toss him over her shoulder. And like when his feet hit the ground, every eye in the audience was straight on that. People heard that thud. And that was what I was trying to capture with the original fight. Because there was a lot of stuff I could do in the comic format that I couldn't do on stage, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Not without a lot of money.
Well, there was also when they fight, you know, they're often up in the air. You know, they leap up into the air before they actually get into the combat, which is very reminiscent of anime and those kinds of good things. Somehow, when they come back down, it's a lot stronger than if they just ran into them with that kind of stuff. So it was really fascinating to see that stuff. But yeah, now that you say that, I realize where all those things came in. That's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. I want to read one little thing there was in the description that makes me laugh. It says, "Snow White Zombie Apocalypse is a story of deep woods and old magic mixed with a healthy dollop of blood, sex, kung fu, and gender politics." Then it says, "You know, fairy tales as usual."
Yeah. Which is, that's a bit double. And what's interesting in that is that in and of itself is a double entendre. because fairy tales, the fairy tales that we've all grown up with through, you know, Walt Disney are very bolderized. They're very, you know, made family friendly, but you go back and you read the original fairy tales, they're gross. the original Red Riding Hood was a bawdy tavern tale, and there was a lot of sexual innuendo in it. And so in a lot of ways, this is kind of straddling the line of how these stories have been told. And it tries to play it both ways by playing with these various entertainment genres.
So it's really good. It's a really good production put together really well. The thing I think we need to make sure people know is now is the time to order the book. We're in the order time with Diamond and things like that. If you go into the Scout Comics, you'll find Snow White Zombie Apocalypse there. And you want to order it at your store as quickly as possible because they have to get their orders in before the end of the month, and that's 2 months before it actually comes out. So, or actually within the next month or so, it's well end of October. So yeah, it'll be.
I think we're coming down to the wire on this. Part of that is, you know, I got to say, part of that's my fault because I had to get ready for Dragon Con, and so like that kind of dominated, and also I had my black belt coming. I had to do a, this will be interesting in my future writing, by the way, because I had to do a 15-man kumite, where it's literally 15 two-minute fights against 15 different opponents. I remember thinking after fight four, I don't think I can do this. And then after fight six, I definitely can't do this. And then by like fight 14, who am I? What's going on? But going through that, putting yourself in that pressure cooker, like, has really opened up a lot of understanding about myself and about ego and about, like, what happens when you push a person beyond their limits. And I really look forward to working that into my future writing.
That's cool. Well, speaking of future writing, obviously Snow White Zombie Apocalypse. Well, I got to ask one more question about this book before I go. Is it, because I see it different ways, is it Snow White : Zombie Apocalypse, or is it Snow White Zombie : Apocalypse? How's this go?
Second one.
Second
one,
really?
Snow White Zombie, yeah. Because it's Snow White Zombie was the original play on words, like white zombie, and I just added Snow White Zombie. For the original play, it was 10 minutes. And then when we expanded the play to the two-hour play, I made it Snow White Zombie Apocalypse, as in like Snow White Zombie Apocalypse, like that is the title of this story. But since most people, we just put it all together. And so now I call it that, or I call it Swaza for the cool kids.
Yeah. Well, I get a kick because on the cover, it has Snow White on the top and then Zombie Apocalypse underneath it, which I guess you have to do for space reasons and stuff. But because I saw that and I was interested because I'm a punctuation Nazi, and I was looking at it going like, where does the colon go in this thing? So it's good to know. I was that's interesting. It actually adds something I didn't expect to it, so that's pretty cool. Cool stuff.
There was a lot of really interesting things. It was great to work within the comics medium too, because I was originally, like, as an artist, I was originally inspired by comics. Mainly, like, beyond my parents, and Rogue, who's the lead singer of the Crew Shadows, probably the person who's had the biggest impact on my life artistically is Bill Watterson. Yeah, he's the man who first, like, Calvin and Hobbes, I grew up, I wanted to be Calvin. I actually, in the fifth grade, I purposefully messed up my hair to try to be more like him until, you know, puberty hit, and I suddenly realized girls didn't like that.
No, that's the thing. But I don't know if you've, there's a book out now that is a sort of an update to Calvin and Hobbes. There's a guy has written it. I've interviewed him, David Papos. And it's about a detective. It's like as if Calvin grew up and became a detective. Spencer and Locke, that's it, exactly.
Yeah, I've seen that advertised. I haven't watched the book.
I highly recommend, especially the second volume. There's a really shock ending at the end of the second volume. It's a big surprise.
I look forward to it. I'd love to talk to that guy sometime. I think we'd have a lot to connect over. It seems like both of us took beloved childhood things and threw them into a horrifying world.
He might be at New York Comic Con. I have to check on that. But if he is, you guys should bump into each other and talk. Because I met him at MegaCon. down here in Orlando, mm-hmm. and I set up an interview, and I started talking, and I read the book, and I talked to him at the beginning of the second series. Groups of miniseries is what they've been doing, and that was just before the final issue of that book came out in this miniseries. I'm sure there's more coming. He's got a book out now called Going to the Chapel, I think is what it is. And I've got an interview with him, too, that's going to air in a future episode about that second series. But I the second one of Spencer and Locke just floored me when we get to the last issue. It was something amazing. So anyway, enough commercial for David. We'll have to look at this. But it'd be funny if you guys got together and wrote something. That would be really an interesting thing to see how you guys
definitely would be a blast. I'd be down for that. You know, it's great to kind of come full circle like that with comics, though, mm-hmm. because, you know, comics were very much my first love. For the longest time, like, I wanted to be a cartoonist, and I even did have a cartoon running in my college paper, but I remember thinking, things aren't working out so well for syndicated cartoonists these days. I know, I'll do the practical thing. I will become an actor.
That's much more practical.
Yeah, oh geez. And then finally I just had to, it was funny because I had it in my head that I'd moved to New York and continue to pursue acting, but I think I'd always known from a young age that I was more of a writer than anything else, but I'd resisted it because it felt too easy. Mm-hmm. So when I hit the city, I was just I didn't go on a single acting audition. I was just 100% writing, and it really paid off, you know. I met some amazing people. I'm the playwright in residence for a company called State of Play. I've had 7 plays run in New York City. And honestly, I'm glad that I learned to act because it helped me connect with characters. Mm-hmm. I don't think I could have written Snow White Zombie the way that I wrote it if I hadn't learned to act. But it's definitely, I'm doing what I'm put on earth to do right now.
Wow. Well, congratulations. Not everybody discovers that. So that's good for you. I'm really happy for you because that's a thing to do. It won't always be easy, unfortunately, but the good news is you've got, you know who you are, and that's a big step forward as far as that goes.
Let's hope so. things have worked out pretty well so far. Snow White Zombie, if people are interested in seeing where the story goes, there's a couple of options for that. There is, if we can get all the details worked out and all the I's dotted and the T's crossed, we can move on with the story in comic format. The other option is I have actually written a 1-hour TV pilot for Netflix. I trained under a Emmy award-winning screenwriter and an HBO exec before I wrote this. And also, and I forgot, I actually wrote it in the class of a guy named George Strayton, who used to write for Xena and Hercules.
Wow.
Yeah. And he really kind of helped shape the screenplay. And I've been shopping that around. So hopefully someone will pick that up. So there could be a series sometime in the future. The play can always be produced. So if people want to see the play, ask a theater company to produce it. Mm-hmm. Samuel French is currently, they're the big play producing company. They're currently looking at Snow White Zombie Apocalypse, the full version. They weren't able to tell me whether or not, these things take a lot of time, and unfortunately, they will not be able to give me an answer before Snow White Zombie is published, mm-hmm. but they're looking into publishing the full play, so people could get the story from there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and the story may, change and grow. It's definitely, when it happens in one form, what happens in one story won't necessarily happen in another.
Right, because, you've got a different method of storytelling. So it just depends on how it goes with that. Well, you've mentioned other stuff. Are there other projects you're working on we should know about?
Yeah, the big ones that I'm working on, the biggest one is After All. That's the fantasy novel that I'm working on with Rogue of the Crew Shadows. And seriously, if you haven't heard of Crew Shadows, check them out. They are absolutely incredible. The latest album is Astro Mythology. I think it's one of the best albums of the past 25 years, easily. Wow. The lead singer and I, we have been collaborating for 10 years on a fantasy novel. We are very close to having it done. We're hoping to have it out in 2020 or 2021, depending upon publication schedules and life events. But it is about a young woman named Reddy who dies in her sleep at 17 and wakes up to find that the afterlife is real. Everything she believes about it is true, and also everything everyone else believes about it is true, and it's all true in the same time and the same place. So she has to, she can run into, like, you can literally run into anybody in this world. You could meet the Norse god Odin. You could meet, famous crusader from the 1200s or the 1100s, you know. And it's all kind of filtered through this fantasy world, this girl's perceptions, and also like the music and mythology and themes of the Crew Shadows. So it's a powerful story, if I may say so myself, and it's something that I'm really excited to get out there. Beyond that, I have a play called North to Maine, which is kind of a fictionalized memoir. It's the first play ever written about the Appalachian Trail, sponsored by the Appalachian Trail Conservancy. And it's all about when I lived in the woods for 6 months. That's been produced twice in New York, and hopefully it'll be produced again. And then there's a web series that I really want to do that I've announced, it's been stuck in development hell for a little while. And that's called NPCs. And it is a comedy about the lives of non-player characters in role-playing games. it starts as a young woman. She is a, kind of the star of her own sort of Dragon Age Mass Effect game, and she takes an arrow to the knee right before the confrontation with a villain and has to get a job selling potions to other more important heroes. So that's a fun series that I've got a whole season of that written, and we're looking to do, a web series with it. And I'm also, I kind of want to do it as a comic book. So if there's any artists out there who are listening, who find that intriguing, please contact me, because I am looking for somebody who has just the right style to really bring that world to life.
Sounds great. Sounds like fun. Okay, if we're going to look for those good things, what about social media? How are you on social media? Where are you out there?
You can just Google me. I'm literally the only Brenton Lengel in the world. So if you Google Brenton Lengel, you get me. So I'm on Facebook as Brent Lengel / Brenton Lengel. You can follow me on Facebook. I'm a little careful about who I friend, because I've had some bad experiences on there. So if you try to friend me and I don't accept you, it's only because I'm being careful there. But you can still follow me, and I may accept. I'm on Twitter at Brenton Lengel. I'm on Instagram, though I don't post there a lot. And my website, www.brentonlengel.com. Though I will say I need to update the picture on that, because that picture is me when I was 27.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, boy, you're the only one with that name. That's the first time I've run into somebody who could actually say that. Because every time I look up the names, I think that they're going to only be one person. I get like 12 of them in Skype. And I go, which one's the right one? So, boy, how about that? Well, that's something. Did your parents know
it's
that?
It's really great.
Did your parents know that when they did that?
I have to be careful now, because if I do something wrong, then I can't blame it on another Brenton.
That's right. Your parents, did they know they were doing that to you when they named you that?
No, I don't think they did. Lengel is a very rare surname, especially spelled the way that mine is. If you meet a Lengel, spelled L-E-N-G-E-L, I'm probably related to them. Wow. Brenton, they settled on because I was born on a hospital in Italy on top of a high hill. And the name Brenton means from the hills or from the high place or from the mountains, which then, it led to being pretty prophetic, because I spent a lot of time in the mountains.
Wow. How about that? Well, I enjoyed Snow White Zombie Apocalypse. I guess that's Snow White Zombie : Apocalypse. I got to make sure that's all right.
Because
it's really,
no
really good.
No colon on the title.
Okay, that's right. The way it's not there. But I really enjoyed it, and I want to see more. So I hope we get to see much more of this, because I was really, really entertained by it. And that last page, like I said, I was like, oh, no, you can't end here. kind of thing, which is really good. Of course, that's the way a good cliffhanger will do. You will leave you wanting more. So I think you did a great job with that. You and the artist, and I'm glad Scout's doing it. I think Scout is one of the best companies out there as far as good storytelling and places I haven't been before. So
they absolutely are. I should mention, by the way, beforehand, because it's entirely criminal that I haven't brought this up, the colorist is Geo Butler. Mm-hmm. Please look her up. She did an amazing job with the color, and she did it quickly. And, like, it really makes the book pop in ways that, like, the black and white line work was amazing, but her color just bang. Wow. So, yeah, definitely look her up as well.
Super cool. Again, Snow White Zombie Apocalypse from Scout Comics. It's going to be out on October 30th, and that's a good reminder, right around the Halloween time. So it just couldn't be better scheduled for that book. So I'd like to see more. I want to see more from you, Brenton, because great storytelling and all kinds of good stuff involved with it. So keep it up, and I hope we get to see much more from you in the future here.
Absolutely. Let's hang out and, you know, look me up at Dragon Con.
Oh, definitely. Definitely do that. And that's it for this week. Be back next episode when I'll have another terrific conversation with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.